the tools that public companies like REITs have that private real estate do not, and the fact that they have the benefit of market discipline. So they have, in our case, relatively low leverage compared to private. In the end, we'll see a lot of the real estate, in my mind, that has gone private come back into the public markets over time.
Hello and welcome to The REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Bork from Quito. My guest today is Tony Edwards, Nareit's Senior Executive Vice President, and a name that's familiar to many of you in and around the REIT industry. Tony will retire from Nareit at the end of March, but not before continuing to share his knowledge at this year's REITWISE, Nareit's Law, Accounting, and Finance Conference, held March 19th to the 21st in Hollywood, Florida. Tony received Nareit's 2023 Industry Achievement Award in recognition of his many years of service to the REIT industry. And I have to add that his extensive knowledge and expert guidance will certainly be missed around the Nareit office. So, Tony, a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Happy to be here.
Now, you're leaving Nareit after a little more than 30 years. What is it about the REIT industry that has kept you so engaged and focused for all this time?
Well, two things. The mission of Nareit is to democratize real estate, to let everyday investors to be able to invest the same way as wealthy individuals, which is what Congress intended. And if you read the 1960 legislative history, that's exactly what it wanted to do. So I embrace that mission. And more importantly, the people that I worked with were excellent. They were smart, funny, caring, and all around very good to work with, very strategic. And we all worked on a cooperative basis with the same mission. And the members who we worked for also treated us with respect and deference and were a pleasure to work with.
And you joined Nareit in 1993, a year which in many ways was transformative for REITs. Can you describe a little bit about what the industry landscape looked like at that point?
Well, there's negatives and positives. The negative was that at that point, commercial real estate was still suffering from a major downturn caused by a number of factors. In the late 80s, first of all, the 1986 Tax Reform Act appropriately stopped tax shelters, real estate tax shelters, but did so in a way that had dramatic negative impact because it was done on a retroactive basis. That was one bad factor for real estate at the time. The savings and loan industry, which had, through a deregulation, had started to invest a lot in commercial real estate on a very aggressive basis, got hurt as part of this downturn so much that most of the savings and loan associations went bankrupt or had to reorganize. And because of all that, and the fact that there was a lot of overbuilding because of the tax shelters now shut down by the Tax Reform Act of 86, the traditional providers of credit, which were pension plans and insurance companies, pulled back. Not only didn't they lend anymore, when their loans were due, they called them. A lot of companies who were performing very well and had very good rents had some desperate choices because even though their properties were performing, they couldn't get any loans to refinance. A lot of these were called bullet loans, and it felt like there were bullets to their heads. And so almost out of desperation, a lot of companies decided to go to the stock market. And that started the wave of IPOs, started with Kimco in November 1991. And they used the cash from selling common stock to the public to pay down debt and then to, with secondary offerings, start buying lots of attractive real estate that no one else could afford because of the crisis. So that's the yin and the yang. It was a terrible real estate environment because of lots of factors. But the bright spot was the wave of REIT IPOs that came and basically saved the day for commercial real estate.
And I'm curious to ask you about Nareit. I imagine it was really quite different from the organization it is today.
It definitely was. When I started in 93, the market capitalization was something like $10 or $12 billion. Nareit itself was very small. I think I was the 15th or 16th employee. And the dues were capped at a laughable level. And the industry was literally an old boys network of people who'd been around for a very long time. It was very passive. REITs were able to be internally managed because of one of the bright spots of the 1986 tax bill. but it was very focused on not spending money and having low expenses and operating the business rather than looking forward to expanding and growing earnings. It also was because of the credit crisis of the late 80s and early 90s. What happened was, and also even before that, in the 1970s, mortgage REITs lent too much. They borrowed short. They borrowed short and lent long, and they suffered some major issues over the period of time. And there's the mortgage REITs that survived basically took properties and then started to have a combination of mortgages, and they were landlords. And better ones eventually became equity REITs, purely landlords. But they basically, for a long time, took whatever loans they made, so they were completely diversified, and there were different property sectors. And major sectors back then were retail and apartments and office. And healthcare was just sort of starting, and none of the new sectors of the economy were anywhere close to being. But what we started to see in the 1990s REIT wave was that a lot of companies focused on property types. First, they were local. Some of the companies around here were focused just in the Washington, D.C. area. Then they went national and followed their tenants across the country. And then some of them followed tenants and became global. But when I started, that was not even a glint in anyone's eye. It was everyone was sort of focused on whatever they had going. Some of the better companies, like Weingarten Realty, which started in 86 and elected restatus in 88, were focused on a particular property sector, were internally managed, had very good corporate governance. And my understanding, that's the model that Kimco used when they launched their IPO. And after that, the dedicated REIT investors urged those companies that were going public to also focus on particular property sectors. So over a period of time, more and more of the companies were concentrating just one or maybe two property sectors. And then you have more like we have today, although albeit in much smaller industry segments.
Things certainly have changed, Tony. And I would imagine looking forward, we're going to see more change in the years ahead.
You would think so. I don't know if we'll ever see Moon or Mars REITs, but I'm sure there's going to be different property sectors that will need real estate to bring the economy forward.
And what about the types of individuals who make up REIT management teams? Have you seen any key changes there?
I have. And the one thing that we've observed is that a lot of the businesses that went public in the 1990s were closely held, largely overseen by families. And like a lot of real estate in the 70s and 80s and 90s, they were very, very entrepreneurial. Of course, they created the business. And there's some characters in there who had a lot of energy, a lot of verve. And over the years, you've seen, just like other industries, as the founders left the scene, they recruited more corporate type managers, executives, some from other industries, and also a lot of people with financial backgrounds, like people who are CFOs who graduated to be CEOs, or people who are analysts or investors who went into the business and worked their way up to become a CEO. So it's the continued professionalization of the industry, which probably happened to the Ford company and the aerospace companies and all the other companies in America, which started by entrepreneurial people that eventually became professional.
And Tony, you've played a key role in nearly every major piece of REIT legislation in the modern REIT era. What would you point to as the most essential legislative goals of your career at NAREIT?
We've been very fortunate to work with our members to achieve some excellent results. And most essential goals were to make REITs competitive with the rest of commercial real estate and to make it easier for investors to invest in REITs. On the first part, even though REITs have grown very large and market capitalization is over $1 trillion, still, according to our research group, REITs are only maybe 15% of the larger commercial real estate industry. And so on behalf of the small investors who invest in REITs, we always have to make sure that we are competitive with the vast majority of real estate not in public hands. The legislation that we've been fortunate enough to secure over the period of time I've been here is to allow REITs to provide more cutting-edge services to their tenants and to have more flexibility in managing their business. and to reduce whenever possible the inappropriate taxes that can be imposed. And we've done this in offshore investors and elsewhere. The other thing that we've been able to do is not only read legislation here in the United States, but also reach abroad. When I started in 93, I think there are less than 10 countries that had REITs. And over the years, especially after when Steve Wexler arrived here in 1997, we made it as part of our mission to spread the countries and regimes that have REITs to allow investors in their country to be able to access real estate. Also, as we've seen in the Japan market, once there are local REITs in a country, those investors will be more likely to invest not only in local REITs, but global REITs, so it expands everyone's horizon. And one of the things that we've done globally, and there's now, as you know, about 43 countries and regions with REIT regimes around the world, is to lower the tax burden on cross-border investment in REITs through tax treaties and through working with an organization called the OECD, which puts out model tax treaties. And they have incorporated the U.S. model tax treaty position that we helped to bring forth in 1997 to lower, so it's easier for us as U.S. citizens to invest in U.K. or French or Japanese REITs, and easier for residents of those countries to invest in U.S. REITs.
Great. And Tony, you've talked about the changes in the property types and the management teams at REITs. Are there other aspects of the industry that have changed noticeably over the past decades?
Generally, that you see that they've become, the people who work at REITs just become more professional, have expanded their range of expertise. So they're now our core members of the public REITs have all sorts of very professional standards as far as operations and high corporate governance. And they've expanded what they've been able to bring to the table as far as offering good services to their tenants, including in the sustainability space. So they're able to provide healthier buildings, and they're able to provide tenants cleaner water and air, and to provide that more efficient workspace. And that's all because of their expertise that's grown over the years.
Tony, I think it's fair to say that the pandemic has had a massive impact on REITs and commercial real estate. In your mind, have those changes really been fully absorbed at this point?
I think we're still absorbing all those changes, and they have impacted some sectors differently than others. One, I think, ironic but very healthy sign is that one of the legislative battles we fought for many years was to the extent that online sales were treated from a tax perspective compared to bricks and mortar sales. And for a very long time, even though technically people who bought merchandise over the internet technically had to pay sales tax, they weren't required to pay sales tax, and that was viewed as a competitive disadvantage. Eventually, the Supreme Court said that compelled the states to collect those taxes, and it was consistent with an amicus brief that. But during that time period, the internet sales crept up year after year. There were a lot of people who thought that the brick and mortar stores were not going to be around in the future. It's all going to be over the telephone or your PC. But what the pandemic has shown, that the retailers have embraced brick and mortar stores as a way to deliver customer demand. And all you could see is their sales and their occupancy, and retail has really, really performed quite well, as have, of course, the industrial REITs. And whether or not the working from home phenomenon is going to work and how that's going to affect real estate, I think it's going to play out over a long period of time.
Definitely. I think that's something we'll be talking about for years and years. So Tony, besides REITs on Mars, what other changes might we see across this industry going forward?
Personally, I think that there is a very large amount of private real estate, as we've discussed. I think that there will be more companies seeing the benefits of liquid markets, as Sam Zell once said. And as REITs have come through the pandemic and the great financial crisis and after 9/11, the tools that the public companies like REITs have that private real estate do not, and the fact that they have the benefit of market discipline, so they have, in our case, relatively low leverage compared to private. In the end, we'll see a lot of the real estate, in my mind, that has gone private come back into the public markets over time.
Great. And Tony, any parting thoughts on anything we haven't touched on already?
Just that I feel blessed to be able to have worked at Nareit for all these years. Wonderful experience, both of people who worked at Nareit and then our members. And I just hope that everyone listening is able to have as their work experience something that's wonderful that I experienced.
And what about what's next for Tony?
Well, I have two wonderful granddaughters that we were able to see a lot. And that's one of the benefits of work from home. But hopefully we'll see them more. We have a lot of travel scheduled. And one of the wonderful things about Washington, D.C. is it has a huge amount of educational opportunities and also lots of live music and plays. And we're near New York. So I hope to spend a lot more time going into that. And if I hold up even more tennis than I play now.
Sounds good. Tony, it's been a pleasure talking to you and also to work with you for about 11 years now. So
yes.
I appreciate all the help.
It's been wonderful working with you and everyone else at Nareit.
Excellent. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the Nareit Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.